Rebecca Stevenson is our business commentator today. Lovely to have you with us.
Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you very much. Now, what is China doing to clamp down on influencers? What is the extent of the influencer market, I guess, in China?
Yeah, well, it's become extraordinarily huge and influential in terms of selling product online. And because of this sort of large influence now that these top influencers in particular are having on the Chinese population, the Chinese government has moved to really restrict and sort of put some rules around what influencers can talk about online. So now what they're going to be doing is basically bringing in that influencers in China will have to have a qualification to talk about certain topics, such as law and medicine. This was announced last week by Chinese regulators. They are saying that for content that requires a higher professional level, like law, finance, medicine, education, live streamers must hold a corresponding qualification to talk about those subjects. China's State Administration of Radio and Television and the Ministry of Culture and Tourism said in a joint release. So influencers will have to show their qualifications to the live streaming platform that they want to operate on, and then those qualifications will then need to be reviewed by the platform. Now, these rules lay out a code of conduct for online influencers, and it includes 31 banned behaviors and an 18-point guideline. Unsurprisingly, the Chinese Communist Party itself is featured in those rules. Live streamers are not allowed to publish content that weakens or distorts the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party. Influencers are also not allowed to use deepfake technology to tamper with party or state leaders. Deepfake technology is the technology that uses artificial intelligence to distort faces, and effectively you could insert the face of a politician or a leader into a video that they're not actually in. In terms of the other guidelines that the Chinese regulators want to see, live streamers won't be able to show an excessive amount of food waste, excessive luxury goods, or an extravagant lifestyle. Content will also not be allowed to be sexually suggestive or provocative, and the live streaming platforms will be responsible for reviewing those certificates and qualifications and then approving the content before it's broadcast. Now, what might happen to influencers that could violate the code of conduct is they could be banned from live streaming permanently, Chinese media has reported, and there's sort of a wider move within Beijing to name and shame wayward influencers, and they were going to publish a regular blacklist of hosts whom regulators expect broadcasters should be boycotting. Now, they will have to show that these influencers have their credentials, and so they'll need to show, for example, you know, their ID, they might show their degree or something like that to the platform, which will then have to verify it. Now, as we've talked about a little bit, you know, it's become absolutely huge social selling or using influencers to sell products via social media. They can often rake in billions of dollars in sales in only a couple of hours. And we've seen a lot of examples with New Zealand firms have tried to cash in on this trend. In 2019, there was a really extraordinary event where the New Zealand Herald reported a top Chinese live streaming celebrity, Via, had generated close to $30 million of sales of New Zealand products in only 4.5 hours. And much more recently, just in November last year, Radio New Zealand reported that an Auckland-based company, Grin Natural, had sold 115,000 toothpaste in 115 seconds in China during an online event with Austin Lee, who's known as the lipstick king of that country. The sales volumes for Grin Natural were equivalent to 2 years worth of sales in the New Zealand market. And Grin Natural, I think, has been pretty lucky with its timing, because the lipstick king who promoted its product, Austin Lee, has now fallen foul of Chinese authorities. The 30-year-old live streamer had over 60 million followers on an Alibaba-owned e-commerce platform, but he was abruptly cut off in his stream after he showed a tank-shaped ice cream dessert. He later posted that this was due to technical difficulties, but it seems to be widely interpreted that Fat Tank ice cream shown on the screen has triggered government censors, who saw it as a reference to the anniversary of the June 4 Tiananmen Square protests and massacre. Basically, since then, the Lipstick King hasn't been seen. His accounts remain active, but he hasn't been posting since.
Goodness. I mean, this reminds us also of Jack Ma, of course, because Alibaba was huge. And I guess this was the first big move against the online trading, and it was happening at the same time, remember, as China was cracking down on a lot of its big wealthy business people and requiring them to gift money back, essentially. So it really is striking at the heart of what has been an incredibly successful e-commerce movement. But the other point, if the tank was picked up, it makes you wonder if the censors are pretty much 24/7 monitoring some of these key influencers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the censorship in China obviously is fairly well known. You know, you have incredible amounts of AI and behind it that are scanning and picking up words. And they obviously, you know, they have huge amounts of people also who are scanning the internet for this thing, because social control is obviously, you know, a huge component of that society over there. And, you know, influencers have grown extraordinarily in terms of influence, but, you know, they are absolutely showing that no matter the size of your following, you could have 60 million followers today. If you do go outside of those lines that they are drawing, you know, that can all be very quickly ended.
So what does it mean globally for the e-commerce? As you say, New Zealand firms making use of this, because it's an absolutely massive industry in China.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I've seen statistics that are estimating that the live streaming e-commerce industry in 2020 was worth over US $180 billion, or more than a trillion won. We're talking about something estimated like 1.23 million professional live streaming hosts and aides working in the industry in 2020, according to a report by iResearch. So yeah, it's absolutely grown exponentially. And there are even schools for influencers, you know, in China, where you can practice setting up your ring light and get sort of, you know, a professional advice on how to grow that as a career. It absolutely is seen by people as a career. But, you know, now they've got this move, and it is being, you know, obviously supported by all of the kind of government tools, including state media. The China People's Daily, a day after the regulations were announced, has said that live streaming is not a job where you can just prepare with some equipment and jokes. They said some live streamers who sell products online have accidentally brought trouble on themselves. And this lesson is profound, the paper said. To be a live streamer, you must respect the rules. Don't test the limits in order to get more traffic. Don't challenge the law to make money, the People's Daily said, and warned that social media sellers playing too close to the edge was not acceptable. And you've picked up a key point here as well about the wealth, and that is another aspect of this that is being picked up by the Chinese regulators. The new guidelines are stressing that live streamers should declare their income honestly and fulfill their tax obligations. Just at the end of 2021, two of the most popular live stream influencers who had, you know, millions of followers were fined millions of dollars for tax evasion by local tax authorities. And even after these two had made public apologies, their accounts and other social media presence was disappeared. So a lot of, you know, up to play for here, but also a lot of risk. The platforms, of course, are already reacting to this announcement. The South China Morning Post has reported that some short video apps have been asking their influencers to upload their records to prove their identity and credentials. They're saying it's not mandatory at this stage, but those who will complete the process on these apps will get a verified icon. So in New Zealand, of course, is not alone in looking at influencers. Last year, New Zealand started looking a bit more closely at the industry, particularly and as to where it pertains to the finance industry. And the Financial Markets Regulator published a guide for so-called finfluencers. This FMA guide emphasizes that talking about money or investing can cross over sometimes into providing financial advice. And of course, you have to have a license from the FMA to provide financial advice. So this guide sort of gives background about how to talk about financial matters in a sort of general way online. So the former FMA boss, Rob Everett, said it's usually fine to talk about financial matters, just keep it general. So once you get started into recommending particular products, specific funds, stocks, or insurance, or telling people what they should do, then that would fall into regulating. In terms of broader rules for influencers, we've just got our bog standard advertising rules, really, and then influencers cannot breach the Fair Trading Act, which is the cornerstone of consumer law in New Zealand. And of course, the Fair Trading Act prohibits misleading and deceptive conduct, as well as prohibits false or misleading representations. The Advertising Standards Authority drew up its own guide for influencers in 2020. And most of the issues that we've been seeing in New Zealand so far has really been around ads that weren't labeled clearly as advertisements. Influencer Simone Anderson has been found to fall foul of advertising rules, posting some misleading content to Instagram and not clearly telling her followers that they were paid for advertisements. So this was the first decision of its kind against a social media influencer, which happened in New Zealand in 2020. Simone often we find back in the news, and she was also the subject of more complaints again earlier this year for her promotion of rat tests. And in this case, she actually just deleted the complaint about posts and no further action was taken.
Interesting stuff. Slightly different environment still from what's happening in China, obviously. Mm. But you make an interesting point to the extent that we've got pretty old rules and regulations, again, applying to old media, particularly with respect to advertising. The FMA role is, you know, interesting as well. But in many cases, the primary role of the influencer is product promotion. So it makes you wonder whether those advertising rules are keeping up with the pace as always.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. And we are seeing, you could look at a lot of things that influencers talk about and think you absolutely have no credentials at all to be talking about these things, you know, around medical claims with supplements is quite a common one. We've seen a lot of chat about, you know, things that can help you with fertility and things like that. Influencers are really skirting a pretty fine line here, I think. And look, all we would really need to see, I think, is, you know, unfortunately, a potentially bad outcome from a consumer, you know, taking one of these supplements or something like that on the say-so of an influencer. You know, hopefully we get ahead of that sort of occurrence before it happens. But there's plenty of dangerous things, I think, out there that people are promoting.
Now, the Roe v. Wade decision in the United States has obviously brought a massive reaction and a polarised reaction in that country, but also here. I'm seeing a senior National MP from that party's Liberal wing on Morning Report this morning warning her old party and her old caucus to be cautious on its stance on this, and whether or not politicians particularly want to talk about an application here, questions are being asked. What are we seeing from the business world in response to that decision?
Yeah, an absolute sort of outpouring of announcements, really, almost as soon as it was confirmed that the Supreme Court would overturn Roe versus Wade. Google sent a company-wide email on Friday US time about the ruling and explained that its employees in affected states can apply to relocate and actually shift out of that state altogether and won't have to explain why. Google's chief people officer, Fiona Ciccone, said in an email to workers, this is a profound change for the country that deeply affects so many of us, especially women. And she said that Googlers can also apply for relocation without justification, and people overseeing the process will be aware. As well as Google, we've seen Amazon and Meta say that they will pay for employees to travel to receive abortions if they're in states when it was banned. And Google has also said it would also provide travel benefits for employees seeking abortion care out of state. We've seen the Walt Disney Company say it will cover travel expenses for employees seeking family planning or reproductive care. Walt Disney has said that it recognizes the impact of abortion ruling and says it remains committed to providing comprehensive access to quality healthcare, including family planning and reproductive care. Disney has 80,000 employees at just at the Walt Disney World Resort in Florida, where the governor there, Ron DeSantis, has signed a bill prohibiting abortions after 15 weeks. So potentially going to see a bit of cash flowing out of Disney for that. And other major media companies, including Netflix, Comcast, Paramount, Warner Bros., Discovery, Sony, et cetera, are talking to their employees about their healthcare policies. Netflix has said it offers a US $10,000 lifetime travel reimbursement for cancer treatment, transplants, gender-affirming care, or abortion. And at Paramount, its CEO sent employees an email after news of the decision broke and said they wanted to be very clear about what will not change at Paramount. And he highlighted the company's health policies, including the coverage of travel-related expenses, such as an abortion. We've seen JP Morgan Chase & Co. Have also said that they are going to cover expenses for travel. And a New Zealand linked firm, Wallen shoe firm Allbirds, has said it will cover the costs for pregnant US staff who need to travel from outside of their home state to get an abortion. You know, it says that it's not a topic, abortion rights, that it would express outwardly at a brand, but because it is one that directly affects the rights and lives of our employees, so we wanted to address this directly and quickly, it said. And look, I have seen a huge amount of cynicism immediately about these announcements, you know, and people have been correctly pointing out, you know, that covering travel costs for abortion is a lot cheaper than paying out for potentially maternity leave. And people are also pointing out that some of these firms that are now making a sort of a statement about this have been long-term bankrolling Republican candidates that have campaigned against abortion rights. So it's really highlighting, I think, that lack of healthcare and the lack of maternity care and paid leave yet again for US employees.
Yes, it's sort of a, even though people knew it was coming, it's kind of a shockwave and a juncture on many, many points, whether you're looking at how that country's democracy is working when a significant proportion of people support abortion rights, and yet you end up with not even a legislative decision in the end, but a Supreme Court decision reversing a 50-year status quo. We were talking earlier with Ron Alving about the sort of machinations of that and why hadn't a democratic administration built in those rights legislatively, and he made the point they need a supermajority in order to do so, and never actually, even under Obama, got to that point. So it's a... and then business sort of has to take its stance on these things. And just listening to you, it sounds like there's some cynicism at some of the stances that have been taken.
Yeah, I am seeing a lot of that, to be honest. And I think it's because it just does really highlight the fact, you know, there's a great Washington Post article just from last year, which went into depth about how the United States is one of the richest countries in the world, and yet one of only a few countries that doesn't offer some form of paid family leave for new parents. Federal law guarantees something like 6 weeks of unpaid time off. Most Americans do not have access to paid family leave through their employers. So a lot to contrast there with New Zealand. You know, we have the government-funded 26 weeks. And there is that wider issue that is often brought up, which is just that tying healthcare to employment just really gives employers a big advantage and sort of a powerful leverage to hold that healthcare over their workers' heads. And I've seen it, for example, pointed out that Starbucks has said it will offer travel costs and things like that, but probably not for staff in unionized stores. So you can see, you know, how it can be sort of held as leverage.
Thank you, Rebecca. Rebecca Stevenson, our business commentator.